guys, here we go. Process to Perform. We got our block party. Your host, Mike Wall. Thanks for watching. If you're enjoying, hit that subscribe button. Like, rate, review us on our Process to Perform channel. Hit me up, MikeWall68 on X, Twitter, and Process to Perform on Instagram. Our show, as always, we're doing a show earlier this week because this free agency is unbelievable. But our show is sponsored by Bet Online. Bet Online continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including professional and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting contests and all the best player props pools. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime for your desktop or your mobile device. So head to Bet Online today to become part of the team. And remember, use your promo code BLEAV, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. And man, we have a crazy start to free agency. I mean, this is we'll see how this plays out, but it's, you know, you're losing two all-timers move on. And, you know, what comes of it after that, I'm not sure, you know, quite frankly. So you have, obviously, David Bakhtiari and Aaron Jones are no longer Green Bay Packers. My opinion, based off tape, based off time, they're the two best offensive players on the team. They have been. Now, the caveat is obviously David Bakhtiari, you haven't been healthy. And so you can't be, you know, I should say when healthy, when he's on the field, he's the best football player on the Green Bay Packers, has been since Aaron Rodgers left. Aaron Jones was the best player on offense last year. The difference that he makes between when he's, I tell him lighter fluid, when he's on the field versus when he's not, his last five games averaged almost 120 yards on the ground, 5.7 yards per carry. Their offense just looks different. You can't, there's just no denying it. The line blocks better. Everything happens a little bit faster. He's a weapon in the slot. He's a weapon in the screen game. He's a weapon, you know, behind center. So those guys are gone and they're going to be missed, but this is, you know, as anybody who's ever retired from anything understands, the game goes on. The game goes on. You think that, you know, all of us that are, you know, any play at a high level are arrogant enough to think that their team's going to be hurting without him. I remember when I went to Carolina, they lost a bunch of players that year, and I think the Packers went 4-12 that year. And I remember talking to my dad about it, because you never want to see your old team. You know, like guys like AG and Mike were there, and I'm, you know, Brett was there still, and then things weren't going well for him. And I go, you know, I'm arrogant enough to think that I would have made a difference, but the truth is, a couple of years later, they won the Super Bowl. So it's just, this is all part of the cycle. It's not what either one of those players, I'm sure, wanted. I'm sure they both wanted to finish their careers in Green Bay. Aaron Jones got done dirty, quite frankly. Dave Bakhtiari was a long time coming because he's been hurt. Aaron Jones just it just doesn't sit right. And it's just business. And Goody just made it business. And I think he was, you know, probably very justified in everything he did from an economic standpoint. As an ex-player who's worried about the locker room, worried about all of that, and just the sheer production of that particular player at that particular position, you want to look a little bit beyond, I think, some of the financial numbers and look at really what effect that guy has, not only on the team, but the locker room, the offseason, everything. Let's start with losing Bakhtiari. Now let's go with it. Let's start with Aaron Jones. So Aaron Jones is out. Josh Jacobs is in. And I've watched a ton of tape on Josh Jacobs. He's a very, very good. I don't think he's better player than Aaron Jones. But he is 26 years old. Aaron Jones could have left last season when they asked him to take a pay cut, and he wanted to stay and make it work. He was, you know, he went to UTEP, got drafted by the Packers. He made it his home. He's one of the most beloved guys in the community. He's certainly one of the leaders on the team, most beloved guys on the field, in the locker room. He wanted to make it work. And then, you know, we don't know what happened inside those negotiations, but obviously, given the fact that he just signed with the Vikings for 1 year, $7 million, the market where he wanted it to be and where his agent wanted it to be and where the Packers thought it might be, were too far apart. And unfortunately, as much as you want to pay a premium for a guy that's that important to your team, at his age, you know, just take the emotion out of it and imagine you're a data scientist. Guy's turning 30. He wants, I don't know what he wanted. Let's speculate. I think it was $12 million against the cap this year. And so he didn't want to take a pay cut. He just came off another year where he was injured. But the last five games, he was the best player on the field. The first five game or whatever games Hammer played, he was the best player on the field. Sometimes as the general manager, you have to make the tough decisions. And I don't know this is the right one for 1 year, considering the difference in the last five games in particular that Aaron Jones made on this team. But if you're a data scientist, all signs point to sell. Go get a younger guy. And Jacobs is an absolute unit. He's a workhorse. They can play him for three more seasons right now as they look towards the future. And they can make this decision that they're making right now with Aaron Jones in three seasons from now. They get the downhill production that they just lacked with AJ, you know, with AJ Dillon in the backfield. I'm sure whether it's Patrick Taylor, whether it's another player, they bring him in for a 1-2 punch. Maybe they draft somebody. I think that's what everybody's hoping now. They're going to have that great 1-2 punch. They can get a kind of a more dynamic back that can be in the slot. I think Jacobs is good in the screen game as well, but you're really talking about a guy who he's 223 pounds. People do not like to tackle him. He can carry the ball as many times as you want. And he's an Alabama downhill running back. He's exactly what you when you got a running back from Alabama, Mark Ingram, Derrick Henry, except for Derrick Henry's backup, who was a good player in Miami. He bounced around the league for a while, and I'm forgetting his name now, and I'm embarrassed because he's a great guy. But aside from the occasional one-offs, you've got a lot of really, really strong downhill runners that dudes just don't like to tackle, and Josh Jacobs is one of those guys. Kenyon Martin. No, that's not right either. Kenyon Drake. I was going to get it. Last year, he was largely out of, his production. The Raiders were struggling, some injuries, blah, blah, blah. But he's a career, the guy's going to give you four and a half yards a game, a carry, and he's going to give you 100 yards a game. That's what you're going to get. And the question that you have to ask here is, the way that Aaron Jones ran made this offensive line better. The way A.J. Dillon ran made the offensive line not as good. So with that more A.J. Dillon style, but a better version of him, can we get what we need out of it? And can we can improve that offensive line? Or do we need to have that guy that changes things up? Or we just need to completely change the way they run the football? Now let's talk about Bakhtiari, because for me, Bakhtiari is a Hall of Fame player. Let's go past all his, if he was an all-decade team, he's probably going to make it. He's been all-pro. He's had multiple Pro Bowls. He was as effective a pass protector as you're going to find in the National Football League for, half a decade, 6 years. He's exactly what, when you're drafting guys, and I think he was a third rounder out of Colorado. Not a lot of attention, but when you're drafting guys and you go, if I want to make my name, I need to hit on a third rounder, and he's going to end up being a Hall of Fame player, and left tackle, no doubt, nonetheless. This guy couldn't have been, he just couldn't have done any more for his career. I mean, if he hangs it up, which he very well, he could go to the Jets. Everyone's thinking he's going to the Jets, but he could very well just hang it up. I mean, what do you don't need to do anything more. And I put some tape together. I could have sat here and done it for 30 minutes, but what I did is I looked at a 2020 game, picked a random week. I think it was week 14 versus the Bears. So then I went, 2021 week 18 versus the Lions. And just put some Lions stuff on here just to kind of, when people say, well, we've been playing without him or this, that, and the other, and we've been doing just fine. Yes. Yes. And I do think that Matt LaFleur, like a lot of play callers, believes that his scheme, he said he made this comment about the defense, but I'm sure this is how he believes about everything. My scheme can overcome all these other problems. So I think he probably believes in large part that his scheme can mask some of the deficiencies of the offensive line. His scheme can operate well without having elite guys across the board. I mean, most places are like that. Most coaches are like that. That's not an indictment in any way. But I will say, when you have a guy like this guy, it's just different. And I just put, this is just the first series of that game. So everyone remembers the crazy stances, but let's just look at this guy as far as first play of the game, under center play action pass, attack, always notice the body position, always notice the hands inside, always notice the hips engaged, absolute master of his craft. The distance, the separation, the body position, he's just such a good pro. Go here again. There's so much consistency. It's like, it's boring to watch. He's not a dominating run blocker like Trent Williams, you know, or some of these other guys. But if you're just talking about consistently, this guy he's one of the few guys I've watched that can play an almost flawless game. Tony Boselli, who remember this name, Ross Verba and I, one day, sat down and watched Tony Boselli, a whole tape of him playing against, he was for the Jaguars, forgot who we were playing. And, you know, you kind of go, all right, it's a plus, it's a zero, or it's a minus. Like, did he have a good play? Was it a non-factor, or did he lose? I don't think we had a single play out of like 68 plays where he wasn't a plus. I mean, he played a flawless game. It's just so rare. Bakhtiari is one of the guys that could have a flawless game. He's that kind of player. And so what you say is right now his left guard misses on the backside B, doesn't do a good job, and he's able to physically outperform the guy across from him. So the three technique or the four eye, whatever this was, has inside leverage. Guard doesn't give him any help. He's losing this battle right now, and he's still able to push down and make this work. And that's what makes this guy special. You see the pass pro here again, just the way that he can just lock in, sinks his hips, points toward, you know, he's got the hands coming from the hips, pointing his guy to the sky, lifts the guy off the ground almost. And you just don't have to, I guess my point, and I could show these ad nauseum, but the real point here is when you have a guy like David Bakhtiari, you can do whatever you want. You can run any scheme you want. You don't have to hide him. You don't have to try something new. You can just go out and whatever you want to call, he's going to be able to handle. Got the bull. You see, he's got the bull and he just sits, sinks those hips, and it's not perfect, but it's pretty damn good. And he's able to push the guy right by, over the top. But Aaron just feels so confident. Imagine how confident your quarterback feels when he knows he doesn't have to worry about getting hit in the back. You know, not a lot of people can say that. Now the guy tries an inside move. He always had that huge jump back and then he settles. Somewhat unique. A lot of guys try to do it, can't do it as well as him. With that huge jump, he could redirect. Such a good athlete, such good feet. He could always redirect and stay square. And now you see at the end of this, I mean, it's like, puts one hand up. He's literally like rodeo clown on this guy with a hand, inside hand, gloved him, puts his hand up, almost showing off, because the game at this level with a guy like this, unless he's playing the top competition, the game's almost too easy for him. And you just don't have that on the offensive line right now. And it's not a knock on anybody else. Not a knock on Walker for sure. It's just a fact of life. Zach Tom's not there either. This is a different level of player you can do different things with. You see here, I think this is a double, and just this is disrespectful what he does to this linebacker. Absolutely knocks him flat on his ass. Dylan gets a run through. And for me, that's one series of one game that I pulled at random. It just, for me, it just shows you're dealing with a different kind of guy. That said, my speculation would now be they've picked up Josh Jacobs. They're going to draft a running back, right? Because they got rid of AJ and Aaron, which again sounds crazy, but that's what they're going to do. the only place on offense where you look and go, man, we can upgrade. Left tackle, absolute stud. There's two guys that I would do backflips if we picked up at center, JRJ and Zach Frazier from West Virginia, or the kid from, you know, JRJ from Oregon. And then there's a handful of guys that could probably start at tackle in college, come down and play that right guard position. John Runyon Jr. is gone. And here's the thing about John Runyon Jr. I know he left. He just took a free agent deal. I'm super happy for him. I think it was the time for a change of scenery. Here's the thing. Everybody just assumes that Sean Ryan, I don't know who everybody is, but the sometimes you go on Twitter. Unfortunately, we're all looking at Twitter when we try to find information now. And people assume that means that Sean Ryan's got that job. I don't think so. They're going to bring in competition. Now, depending on how well they think Sean Ryan's jump is going to make from, you know, kind of the first year of really playing to this year, to year two, to year three, they could bring in a real stud that can play the right guard position. They could bring in like a first or second round guy. We'll get to that a little bit later, but I know there's going to be a real competition at that spot. Now, he might earn that spot, and let's hope he does, because what you want is the drafted guy that you compensated in draft pick for picking up Sean Ryan from UCLA. He certainly has the physical ability to do it and just needs to continue to develop. I just don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I think he did enough last year, for me at least, to say, hey, we want to keep this guy in the rotation. We want to give him a chance to start and take this position over. And I thought you had to get rid of John Runyon Jr. In order to do that. I also think, quite frankly, the left guard and the center, or left tackle and the center position, are far more areas of need at this stage, just because Josh Myers hasn't turned the corner like you thought he was going to. Although I think he did play well, especially in a bounce back year last year at the end of the season compared to the year before. But if you're looking, there's just happened to be two really good centers in this draft that might fall down to, what are we, 25th pick. And there's always enough talent at the tackle position that you can find a left tackle in the first round if you want to go look for one. I don't think that there's the outstanding like trio of talent there was a couple years ago when you had Charles Cross, you had Icky and Neil, at least like the hype before the draft with those guys. Like, you don't feel that same way. I know they're talking about Joe Alt, but there's a couple other guys. Obviously, the kid from Georgia is really good. There's guys out there that you're going to be able to find, and whether you want to, you need to move around to find one, it just seems like that becomes the priority. And I'm saying that, one, because Matt LaFleur is an offensive head coach. But two, lost in all of this, unfortunately, or maybe good for him, is that we picked up a really good Xavier McKinney from the New York Giants. Alabama product. So we got two Alabama products in. And so when I say he's an Alabama product, Brian Branch, that we went in depth last year and got picked up by the Lions and had a great start to his career. Xavier McKinney was playing the star position at Alabama, I think, before Brian Branch. So when you watch the Giants, they're putting him in that position as well. This guy can, well, first of all, let's start with maybe the most important thing, captain, right? Leader. In that room, losing Rasul Douglas, young guys, interesting, unique personality in Alexander. You need to have that. He's young, but just like Minka Fitzpatrick was young coming to Alabama, just like Brian, these young Alabama guys in the DB position, they got it. Like, they got it already. They got it right now. Whoever's coaching them through Saban, the whole thing, they walk in ready to go. You watch this guy's film. He's prepared. He is a great communicator, and he's fast with the football, right? So you start going, I really, really like this move. I don't know if I like it as – there's always guys you have favorites and whatnot, but this guy is a really, really good football player. I put some tape together. I'm going to give you just my quick scouting report on him. So last year, 116 total tackles, 78 solo, half a sack, one forced fumble, 92nd in the league, 11 passes defended. Good for 28th in the league. Three interceptions, good for 25th in the league. And He's 6 foot, 200 pounds, or like 201. They have him listed at. Not a big guy, not a thumper. He has range. Giants played him like it, like I said, like in Alabama, star position a little bit, as well as deep safety. He can play at all three levels, loves to come in the box. For me, not great behind the line of scrimmage, but for me, it's coaching. It's with the Giants. It's how the Giants are coaching him, much more so than his instincts or athletic ability. This guy has instincts. Okay, he's not as physical maybe as the kid last year that got drafted, Brian Branch, to, you know, for trying to compare apples to apples as far as what positions they played in college, same place. Big thing. He's ticking boxes, man. First of all, both guys you bring in, captains on their jersey. Big deal. Postseason honors. All pro 2 years ago for Jacobs, right? Postseason honors for McKinney this year. Big deal. I think for McKinney, coaching and the scheme of Halfley, and we don't know exactly what that looks like now, but you just start saying single safety pressure, okay? This guy's kind of already had an opportunity being young in the league of doing all these things, can unlock what I think is a really, really high ceiling, already playing at a high level. He's a very, very instinctive player. Let me show you a couple of clips. And again, I'm not cherry picking here. What I'm doing is I'm putting a tape on from last season, run a couple plays through, show you what I see, how I see it. Is what it is. Some of this is good, some of it's not good. All right. So 29, he's on the right side of your screen, and we're talking about coming off the edge. And this is just a coaching fix, right? Because he should be making this play. He can chase this down very easily. So you got two problems here as far as he's starting at depth instead of getting to the line of scrimmage. One, two, the defensive end doesn't do a good job of crossing face on Zach. But you see that there's a little bit more of an angle, but just the speed, the range. He looks like he's not big, but he's certainly not frail. He's not small, right? He looks like a well-built guy. Deep player, 20 yards off the line of scrimmage here, has the vision. And you just see he's got to take over the top, redirect, break down and try to make a play. Again, when you watch safeties, it's hard because, you know, the guy has 78 solo tackles, right, over the course of 16 games or 17 games. This guy's got one sack. He's got 11 passes defended. He's got three picks. So you look, it's like you really have to go try to make a highlight tape if you want to just show highlights. But what I care about, what the scouts care about, how does he get out of transitions? How's his instincts for the football, right? Is he going towards the contact or away from the contact? What happens in space when he breaks down? Is his feet wide? Can he make tackles when he has to? These are the things that are maybe a little bit more important than showing a couple passes defended or a couple picks, because all of it leads to those big plays. And the other thing is, too, these days, with all the things you can and can't do on offense and defense from a passing standpoint, it's like the Dallas Cowboys 2 years in a row. They got guys that, you know, cornerbacks that are going to be up for Defensive Player of the Year. Then, like last year with Bland, you know, DK Metcalf shows up and goes, no, he can't play man coverage against good players, right? And 2 years ago or 3 years ago with Diggs, before he kind of figured it out, he's jumping every route. They do double moves. He's a feast famine guy. So you want to see just instinctively how these guys are playing. You want to see how they move. You want to see how they use their hands into contact, etc. Like, that's what really is going to give you a good picture of, is this guy interesting enough to us to continue to do further work? Certainly, I think Xavier McKinney shows those traits. So we see he's coming down here in the box. You see the way that the Giants run some of this stuff. You want that backer to sneak over. They do here. You're going to come down and try to make a play, just get involved. And these are the kind of things we want to talk about here. You got to tackle with a base. So you're breaking down with Patrick Taylor. Hey, go ahead, get your hands inside your frame, break down, don't get your feet wide. Go ahead and make this play. This is kind of the big one for me right here. You want to be able to dominate. Malik Heath dominates him on this play, right? So Malik Heath has to stop penetration in the B gap. He stops the penetration. He ends up turning him out, gets him frustrated. They start doing some little John and push yapping. But if you're talking about Xavier McKinney now, this is where at 6'1", 6'2", 200 pounds, you go, all right, is this the right position to play him? He's been capable of playing this with the New York Giants. He's gotten postseason accolades, but how do we use him so he's the most effective? So far, when we look on kind of behind the line of scrimmage, at the line of scrimmage plays, he's not exactly ideal from an angle standpoint. And here you're just going to see from a physical violence standpoint, man, you got to be able to get through and push this guy back into the hole. He's not really able to do that. Ends up getting driven back. This is a good play by Malik Heath, but when you're making big signings, this is something you go, hey, listen, you got to turn this guy and be able to get in on this tackle, really close this down a little bit better. And it looks like I'm missing one thing. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Nope. Well, I think you get the point. The point is, we got a guy with range. We got a guy that can play at all three levels. We have a leader. We have a guy that's played at a high level. He was there with Martindale and the Giants. I think when things were going good, right? When Daboll, the honeymoon was still going, they had some success, made the postseason 2 years ago. He's been a staple in their defense. Most importantly, you're getting a competent player who can communicate on the back end. I think that might be the most important thing you needed. A really high value guy that can communicate Halfley's scheme, system, calls, checks to the rest of the team. He is all over the screen doing that. Can tackle in space. Has great range. You can play him deep post safety. You see he can come up and make plays. There's a couple plays that you'd like him to be a little bit sounder tackler. And there's also a couple plays where you go, okay, are we utilizing him in the best way possible? There was also a couple plays on there where ends up rushing against like Zach Tom. It's like, why even show you guys? He's not going to beat Zach Tom. But they do bring him pressure off the edge. And again, he not only plays, one of the two deep safeties, he'll play the third guy at that star position. So he'll play like a slot. They'll bring him down and play on the tight end. They feel comfortable with that. I think that's an interesting quandary just because he's 6'2", 200 pounds, but you just have to see how he's going to be used. This is a great pickup. This is something the Packers desperately needed. And I just can't you have to be excited that they – listen, there's certain places where you bring in a guy and you go, I think we're going to be good here. When you bring in an Alabama DB, at least in my experience, they seem to have their stuff together, man. They seem to be just pretty good players. And an Alabama running back, Alabama defensive back – that's pedigree, man. You need to bring in those type of guys. Do not minimize how important it was, I think, for Goody and for Coach LaFleur that both those guys wore C's on their chest. I think that's a big deal. All right, have some listener questions as we get into it. Number one, how do players see the Aaron Jones Bakhtiari moves? And I think the first thing you do as a player is you especially with the Bakhtiari thing was a long time coming. Just because of the injuries, huge cap number, blah, 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 blah. The way he talked about last season, as far as being a rebuilding year because Aaron was gone, the relationship that him and Aaron have. I mean, I don't know what the odds are that he goes to the Jets, but it's gotta be pretty high. So I don't think anybody, listen, the guys in the offensive line room are going, oh, man, he was really good. I learned a lot from him. I think some guys in the locker room are going, man, what a leader that guy was. We're going to miss that part of this, right? And it's just a reminder what an ugly business any of this stuff is because inevitably you can't play forever. The game moves on. The game passes you by. I think with Aaron Jones, it's a little bit different because you have this very recent understanding of the difference it has on the offense when Aaron Jones is in the football game. And unfortunately, or whatever for AJ Dillon, it is like when Aaron Jones is out, that means AJ Dillon is in, and the Packers weren't nearly as good with AJ. When Aaron Jones is in, because of Dontavian Wicks, because of Jaden Reed, because of Aaron Jones, and all the things, Malik Heath, all the Dobbs, but really those, really you think about those rookies and all the places you could manipulate them. And now you've got another guy that could do that with the mind of, you know, the mastermind of Coach LaFleur and the way that he can manipulate space using these really unique individuals. I think those guys are looking at this like they could be thinking like, okay, I'm going to eat a little bit more, but they also have to understand like offensive line knows we were not nearly as good without Aaron Jones, right? Jordan Love knows I'm not nearly as comfortable right now today, day one, without Aaron Jones, you know, the prospect of having Aaron Jones as a check down, a handoff, a screen, et cetera. But in this case, it's not AJ Dillon anymore. It's you're getting a guy that was an all pro 2 years ago. You're getting a Josh Jacobs, who's an absolute unit. Like he, for some guys, he was probably running back number one over Saquon Barkley in this offseason. If you made that argument to me, I know physically Saquon's just kind of a different guy, but if you just look at production and the kind of guy you want, it's hard to argue anybody against Josh Jacobs. He's a really, really good player. It's nothing's a bargain, but it seems like a steal in this day and age with running backs, how much you have to pay these guys for the level of production you can actually get. So I do think there's some emotion to it, but players, I can just tell you when we lose guys, when you guys get cut and it's unexpected, you hurt for them. Usually you end up at their house that night, a couple cocktails, talk about how much, how much you appreciate them and how great whatever the next destination is going to be, right? Because we're always being positive. But for guys that you know are going to move on, for guys that are going to be free agents, it's a celebration. It's an opportunity. Hey, we think you're going to go get paid. We think you're going to go somewhere that really appreciates you, et cetera. You know, unfortunately, these are the kind of unexpected, at least with the Aaron Jones one. I bet you there was, if he was still home last night after he signed with the Vikings, there's 20 dudes over his house. That's for sure. How hard is it to kick inside to guard year one? So a lot of questions are revolved around what are we going to do with the offensive line position? And usually Goody likes to draft a tackle, maybe kick him inside for a year, then move him back out. Here's the thing. It depends on the scheme and the system. It really depends on the body type. So Jonathan Ogden played left guard for the first year of his career in Baltimore, right? Jonathan Ogden's 6'9" with that afro, right? Like he's a tall guy. You can do it. Tunzel played guard his first year. Brandon Allen was playing left tackle. So you can do it. Now, how effective you are depends on, like, how is it easy for you to kind of unfold? Like, are you if you're a 6'7" guy, it's hard to play guard, quite frankly. If you're a 6'3" guy, it's a little bit easier because those guys that you're playing against, 6'3", 295, 315, whatever, but, they're more direct, right? So the game happens a little bit faster. In the immediacy of confrontation is a little bit faster because of the distance between you and the three technique, or you and the two eye. There's obviously not as much space outside. And, quite frankly, and I played this position, like one third of the game, you have help or there's, it's some sort of double block, with the center. So only two thirds of the game, you single it up, if that. So from that perspective, that's why tackles get paid more. It is a little bit, play in, play out. You're a shorter path to the quarterback versus a longer path from the tackle position, but the tackle is going to have action. And nowadays with the chips and all that stuff, maybe it's closer to even, but the tackle is going to have action every play or almost every play, unless they run like a drop zone. But I think for most guys, it's easy. If you've got a little bit of like violence to you, and you're a tackle, athletic tackle. If you like the violent part of the game, moving inside is really not that bad. Do you think a top tackle is available at 25? And this is really the question. I'm just going to roll over to the tackles here on my little Google machine. And so you start looking at, you got Alt, you got Fashanu from Penn State. And I think for me, I think the right tackle, Fuaga from Oregon State, is going to go pretty high. Now, then you start talking about, okay, the kid from Bama. You start talking about Mims from Georgia, which is not, he's not a Packers guy. I mean, 6'8", I mean, 340. I'd love to see what happens if they draft a guy like that, but holy hell, that's a lot of human, you know? And you look at Mekhi Becton, I've said this since day one, and it's not a knock on him, but if you're that big and you hold that much weight, there's a lot of injury probability. And the second thing is, if you got a guy, when you're 6'8", 6'9", everybody turns into Dwight Freeney. Who's the one guy that gave Jonathan Ogden problems? Dwight Freeney, right? Last year, Myles Garrett, who's 6'5", but has ridiculous bend, he's running circles around Mekhi Becton. Why? It's hard for that guy to get that low. So I don't know if that's my guy there. Now, Troy Faletanu, he might be a better guard. I don't know. But if he's available, man, snatch him up as fast as you can. That guy's an absolute unit. I like the kid from Oklahoma. A lot of people are talking about the kid, Graham Barton from Duke. Haven't watched enough tape on him to tell you, honestly. Jordan Morgan, we talked about the kid from Arizona. He's going to be, I don't think he's a first round draft pick. But I think realistically, you could look at some of these guys and say that, you know, maybe the top, so Alt, Fashanu, Latham, Fuaga, Faletanu for sure. And Mims, is somebody's going to fall in love with Mims because they're going to look at the Tennessee tackle last year, or they're going to look at the other kid, the big kid from Oregon, Ohio State, the right tackle from Ohio State, and they're going to go, okay, we can definitely work, right? Just huge humans, strong, big weight. They're not 400 pounds, but they're, you know, 340, 350. You can work with that, man. There's something there for sure. In the case of Aaron Jones and David Bakhtiari, how do these breakups work? Is it the team or the player? And I can tell you my experience when I decided to go free agent. I think when you're older, the dynamic changes, first of all. So both these guys wanted to be Packers for life, but you have to be. If you take too much of a pay cut, you're going to constantly feel like the team doesn't respect you. There's no two ways about it, because the only way you show respect in this league is by the money that you make, right? And I know Tom Brady didn't always take top money because his wife was a supermodel at the time, was making, what, $45 million a year or something, right? And he kind of – so that's a different situation. But generally speaking, respect is not – respect is between players is something completely different, but I'm talking about respect from ownership to the player. Like, you show respect by how much you're going to pay that guy. And so if you take, like, let's just pick a number and say Aaron Jones, you know, they said, hey, Aaron, we want you for $6 million. And he's like, well, I was just the best player on your offense. I made 11 last year, or 10 or 11 last year, and you want me for six now. I can't take that because you're showing me disrespect. And if I constantly be angry about it, and it's not going to help me, it's not going to help you, it's not going to help me. When you are feeling like you're in your prime, you make this decision. Am I getting what I want from this team? In other words, do I feel appreciated? Do I feel wanted? Do I feel like this is the best fit for me? Do I feel like I have a great relationship with my coaches? Do I feel like I have a great relationship with the management? Do I feel like I have a great relationship with the players? How important is it to me to finish my career in one spot? The other side of that is the ownership or in the management, the personnel guys are going to look at you and go, okay, for me, for example, is guard a premium position? Am I willing to pay a guard what someone like me was going to make in free agency? Like, Ted came out and said it. Ted's like, he didn't think the guard was a premium position. So, and you can't hate on that, right? So, like, Sherm, he wanted to re-sign me. And he made it quite clear to me, like, hey, we're going to pay the way my contract was. They're going to have to pay me a huge sum of money. At the time was a ridiculous amount of, flat payment to continue that contract. And we put it in there as a poison pill, so they'd have to cut me. But they made Ted general manager, and Ted was like, "All right, you, Marco, I think Sharp, guys were gone." And he was like, "I think we can, find replacements for the guard position." Now, 3 years later, when they had 3 years of struggling to find that replacement, he said, "Okay, we should have kept Mike. That was a mistake." Right. But that's a unique situation that just, Sitton and TJ just hadn't quite come along yet. Right. So they got to look at it from the perspective of at running backs like that right now. Do you, as much as you like that guy, do you want to set a precedent by overpaying for a guy that you like? Do you think you can find any kind of replacement that's similar in the market right now? Because like guard, running back, I think it's changed a little bit with guard in particular, but running back now, they're going, "Hey man, we can find a third round pick. We can find a fourth that can average 4 yards a carry, especially in the boxes that you're seeing in defense now." So sometimes it's hard to ascribe a value or to quantify, a guy like Aaron, who last five games, he averages 5.7 yards per carry and doing all these great things. But then it's like age, this, that, the other, cost, now we can get a guy 4 years younger who's been second team all pro 2 years ago for not a ton of money, quite frankly, compared to what we used to think about running backs should get paid. So it's always, there's two sides of it. And hopefully they're having conversations so they're aligned. I think what happens more often than not, it's unfortunate, is, like Goody comes out and says, "Oh, we have every intention to keep Aaron." And that probably was not communicated the right way, in that one, if Aaron thought, "Okay, that means that, I'm going to demand this or that or the other," or two, he just was saying that to keep everybody quiet, so he didn't have to hear speculation. There's so many things that go on in backdoor conversations, hallway conversations between player and personnel guys, agent conversations between agent and personnel guys. There's so much of that happens that we're not privy to, right? Unless you're a guy who's, talking to the agent, talking to the players, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's what's hard about these situations is you really don't know how this happened. You just understand, like, the meat and potatoes of this are you had a 29, 30-year-old guy who was a great player for this team, third all-time in a lot of categories for running back position, right? You now have a 26-year-old guy who, for the next 3 years at least, is going to be a really, really high-level player if he stays healthy. It's hard, but it makes total sense. And then the last one is, what does a player go through when a team doesn't want them anymore? So if you're a long-time guy like these two and they just go, it doesn't make sense anymore, how do you feel about that? Well, I would say this, for me, the guys that I know that struggled in retirement, that were bitter at the National Football League when they retired, those guys usually were hurt or they aged out of playing, if that makes sense. They didn't get to choose their, you read those books where it's like choose your adventure. They didn't get to choose their final chapter, right? The team said, no, you're too old. We don't want you anymore. Or no, you're not good enough. We don't want you anymore. Or, no, you're too expensive. We don't want you anymore. Right. And if you've had a long, fruitful career and you've enjoyed your experience, I think you could tear that page out and throw it in the wastebasket and just enjoy the journey and for what it is. But it's very common for these guys, because football players think that they're invincible. Like, that's just part of our, we have to feel that way. It's part of our DNA. So when somebody all of a sudden tells you, like, you're not fast enough anymore, you're not good enough anymore, you cost too much, you're too old, we want to get a younger, that stuff for some guys is, you can't even fathom that it's happening, because you go, wait a second, I'm him. I was him when I was 21. I'm him when I'm 31. And that's just not the truth. And I think it's further away you get from, as for a retired guy, the further away you get from that, you realize it's absolutely how it is. And you can usually pinpoint the time, the very specific play where you're like, okay, I'm not him anymore. I can't move like that anymore. I can't do that anymore. But I think that's the hard part, right? Is somebody, you never want in your whole career, you never want anybody to tell you that it's over. You want to be able to make that decision on your own. I think when you make that decision on your own, you're at peace with yourself, right? It's like when Gronk retires, everybody would still want Gronk. Makes the decision on his own, at peace with himself, right? when you're told you have it's over, that's hard to deal with, at least initially. Now, the further away you get from that situation, I think you start remembering the good times. And I think when you look at Bakhtiari in particular, you know, what he came out with and the love he shows the fans, the love he shows the community, the love he shows the organization, I think right now you see, okay, listen, guys, this was probably coming for a long time. I've had time to reflect. I've been injured. I understand. I'm going to appreciate everything that happened, right? I'm going to appreciate everything that I got to do there, the friends, the relationships, everything that was so special to me. He's lived the dream. He's a left tackle for the Green Bay Packers for 10 years. He lived the dream. So there's nothing to be upset about. Only positive things. And I think you go on and just go about your business. There'll probably be some more stuff as we move forward here from a free agent standpoint. We get closer to the draft. I thought it was important to, one, talk about the impact of Bakhtiari and Aaron Jones, because they're you know, they'll be Packer Ring of Honor Hall, whatever they are, Packers Hall of Fame. They'll be those two guys without a doubt. I think one of those guys is a gold jacket guy. I think he's first ballot, quite frankly, for me. I don't know if he gets it or not, but that's how good he is. And when you lose guys like that, there's always that, okay, who takes over as leader? Who does this? You know, there's all those questions, but that figures itself out in the locker room. And you know, the thing is, with whether it's Jordan Love or it's not, understand us decreeing that Jordan Love is the new leader of the team doesn't make it so, right? Certainly removing two huge older pieces of the puzzle paves the way now for an Elgin Jenkins to be the leader of the team. Or the offense. Jordan Love to be a leader of the offense. Romeo Doubs to be a leader of the offense. Josh Jacobs to come and be the leader of the offense. That's there. That's on the table now. Now, how that works out, those personalities, you got to figure that out. You know, the team's got to figure that out internally. And we might never really know until four or five years down the road. But you are losing two big personalities officially off the team. And you are now getting a really good player on defense. And I'm going to end it with this off topic. My son got his Instagram account hacked today. I'm just getting all these messages from it. Now my son is a 15-year-old on social media, probably more than he should be. And he says to me today, he says, "Hey dad," he's still laughing in the car. He goes, "My buddy so-and-so is sending me all these texts. Like he can't get into his email. And so he wants to send me a code and I can read it back to him." And I said, "Are you serious? Think about what you're saying. He's going to send a code to your phone instead of his phone. And you're going to read it back to him. You're going to send it to him." He said, "Yeah." I said, "That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard." And as it turns out, he didn't hear a word I said. And he did exactly that. And they hacked him, and now he's asking everybody for money. So, there it is. Thanks to BetOnline, our sponsor. Find me at Michael C. Instagram, and please, if that's correct, this is Block Party with Mike Wall. Thank you, guys.